Hello and welcome to Talking Shit About, a monthly podcast where I, Elizabeth Wipperman, interview someone about something they love, something they hate, something they've been through, or something they just know a lot about. And hopefully by the end, we've all learned something. I have serious dry mouth right now. I apologize, but don't worry, you won't have to listen to my dry mouth for too long. This episode is super educational. Thank you so much, Ashmeta, for coming on the show. I am honored to have you on. She is a fantastic guest. Go check out her podcast, Don't Know, Do Care. It's hilarious and also educational. I feel like I should put the spiel at the end of the show so we can get into the interview, because I know a lot of people don't like long intros. So, oh, yep, there goes Amp rubbing the mic. It's time. Let's start. Let's talk some shit.
And I was like, what the fuck does that mean? I have friends that are firefighters, and I know that they use soap.
And she was screaming at me over soup.
Fuck this, I am not ever talking to a Scientologist again. These people are all insane.
I'm putting my bricks in the dumpsters, motherfuckers. Do you see me, bitches? I'm throwing my bricks. And he's just like chucking bricks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Talking Shit About. I'm here today with Ashmeta, and she is the host of, oh my god, this is such a bad move, Don't Know, Do Care.
Yes.
Okay, sorry, great. I had a major brain fart there for a second. I was like, I know it.
That's completely all right. It's too new a podcast to be known right now.
And we are in totally different time zones right now. It's about 8 mm-hmm. o'clock here. It's about 9:30 p.m. there. So thank you so much for being flexible and being down to come on the show. So let's introduce yourself, anything you want the listeners to know, and of course, about your podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Elizabeth. I listened to, like I mentioned, I saw your post on Reddit, and then I listened to a few of your episodes. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I was listening to the one about getting fired, and it just felt like I was sitting in a friend's drawing room and listening to them talk about their lives. So I'm really happy and excited to be here. So about me, in my personal life, I am a huge feminist, mostly angry, mostly in despair at the condition of the world, very bitter. How can you not be, right? It's just looking around us. I also am a very left-leaning person. I'm in general a political person. It's difficult to not have that as a part of your daily life. And I mean, of course, that speaks to people who can avoid it. Have a lot of privilege, but most people can't. So I choose to continue to be political. I don't think I can get rid of it. Professionally, I am a marketer. I recently have joined this really cool brand. It's called Jivya. It's in India and based in India. And it's a plant-based, 100% plant-based fashion brand. So that's an exciting project. I also do a bunch of other things. Like you mentioned, I recently started my podcast. It's with two of my partner and another friend of ours. So three of us get together. It's called Don't Know, Do Care. And the whole concept is that one of us is going to prepare on a topic that the other two have no idea about. And then we attempt to educate each other on it. And mostly it's a lot of ranting, it's a lot of rambling. Depending on whose episode is it, because the three of us have wildly different personalities as well. It can be entertaining, it can be fun, or it can be extremely ragey if it is my episode. So it's essentially we took the shortest route out. We took, what we used to do anyway. That when the three of us and a couple of other friends used to get together, and we have such wildly different interests, we would just get talking about one thing, and it is something that the other two have, or the other bunch of group has no idea about. So it's almost teaching somebody an entirely new concept. And we were like, okay, maybe we can turn this into a podcast. And it's been quite fun so far. And we are of course available on, this is plugging myself in, we're available on all platforms, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, I love your show. I'm so glad you reached out. It's like,
thank you.
It reminds me of like Do Go On and like You're Wrong About kind of combined. It's like, you like you said, the like kind of like educating people who don't know the topic, but then also you guys are just like, your dynamic is so great. And I feel like I'm learning without actually feeling like I'm learning. So
that is the goal, that, you know, it should, sometimes we do talk about subjects that we want people to know, right? It is like, there is a serious intention behind a couple of the podcasts episodes, but we don't want it to feel heavy and you know, like a lecture. So we try to make it the way we would talk to each other. So it's literally just that conversation, editing out the parts that we really can't make public, and that's it. That's just what we do.
So you mentioned that you are into politics, or at least, you know, that's something that you're passionate about. So today we were going to talk about the RSS, which I am not going to try to pronounce it. And then, yeah, just kind of go into, I guess, the group and the history, if that sounds good to you.
Absolutely, it does. So it is, RSS is, and we're going to call it RSS throughout the episode, because it is it's verbose, it's a mouthful, even for people who are very familiar with the Hindi language, as I am. So it's called Rashtriya Swayam Sevak Sangh, RSS, which translates to, if you can't really register that, it's completely fine. It's a terrible organization. It translates to literally to National Volunteer Organization. This is a Hindu nationalist volunteer organization, right? It's very much there's a concept called Hindutva, which I'll be getting into later as we go about the conversation. But it is a very, very religious, Hindu religious nationalist organization. And this year they turned 100. Quite an unfortunately long legacy they have left behind, and they started off in 1925 during the British colonial rule. And when you just read about like what they say about themselves, it sounds very innocuous and innocent, but it's anything but. So that's the RSS, intro and like a brief background. It actually began as a social and cultural organization. They were not a political organization in 1925, and the whole idea was to, you know, as a religious group would do, right, was to instill, you know, in Hindus the Hindu values, so to say, the religious values. So there would be a lot of cultural and social discussion. But as you can imagine, with any religious group that aims to unify people within one group, it by default means alienating a bunch of other people. And that's where the problem began, right? Started off as the social and cultural movement, and then went fully towards justifying the establishment of a Hindu hegemony in India. This concept called Hindutva, which is essentially within India. I mean, the concept says that make it completely Hindu-based, right? Because we are the majority population in India, it should be our religion that dominates the whole state. So establish sort of an ethno-state, which we all know leads to nothing good. And this as a concept is what the RSS is built on. And Hindutva as a concept also has been, it's been brought about by this gentleman called V.D. Savarkar. He was a terrible, terrible right-winger. And this was in 1922. And then in 1925, when RSS was formed, they adopted this and fully made it their motto, and that's how they've become very terrible organization today.
Got you. So they were kind of, it was kind of like a response to colonialism. Is that like the formation for?
Interesting that you say this, because you'd imagine that was the case, right? That when an organization such a that places itself as going back to your roots and being culturally very, very stoic and, you know, absolutely putting their foot down, saying, hey, this is what we need to go to. You'd imagine that there would be this anti-colonial establishment. And they absolutely weren't. They were very much pro-colonial group. They had their founding member included. The founding member's name is Dr. K.B. Hegrever. So we are not going to go into the, I'm going to trigger a lot of abbreviations because the names are long and complicated and I forget them. So we'll just keep it that. So Hegrever, including Hegrever, who was the founding, who was the founder, they were great pals with the British. And in the recent past, there's been a lot of attempt to rewrite that history, claiming that they were anti-colonial rule and that they participated in the Indian freedom movement, which was absolutely not true. So if I have to give you a little bit of the background of what the pro-colonial stance was of RSS. So before the independence, I love that your cat is just coming here. It is, he's now a part of this episode.
Yes.
We just let him be
He
it's
very much
his.
wants to be a part of it.
Yes, absolutely. Cats are always welcome. All right, so before we got independence, right, from the British colonial rule, and this was in 1947, there were primarily two key figures in RSS. One was, of course, Hegrever, who was the founder. And then there was another gentleman called Golwalkar, who became the leader of RSS in 1940. That is after Hegrever died, right? Now, these two people, the reason I'm mentioning them is that in today, in modern times, especially in the past about 10 odd years, especially, but also since approximately 1980s, 1990s, there's been a lot of push to recognize these two men as people who are a part of the movement, so recognizing them as freedom fighters. But if we go back a little bit, so from 47 onwards, right, like the first 50 odd years of independent India, there was no discussion about RSS within the freedom struggle movement, simply because there was no doubt that RSS did not participate in it whatsoever. RSS was also, in fact, notoriously against this party is called Indian National Congress. This was the party at that time, point of time, it was one of the leading parties of the movement, right? And not to say that the Congress Party or the International Congress Party doesn't have terrible people or didn't have terrible people at that time. They have their own share of problems, to be honest. But they very, I mean, we can't deny the fact that they played a huge role in Indian independence and RSS didn't, right? And then in 1998, India got a prime minister. His name was Atal Bihari Vajpayee. Vajpayee was trained within the RSS. So RSS at this point of time spotted an opportunity to turn the narrative in their favor. Right, before 1998, the right-wing narrative was not very strong at least in the political scenes, right? So in 1998, when this gentleman Vajpayee came to power, RSS started a massive propaganda campaign to recognize the two leaders we spoke about of RSS. Hegde were the founder, and then his successor, Golwalkar. They are always going to be, by the way, men, and they are always going to be men of, in India, there's a, at least in the Hindu religion, there's a huge problem of caste. So it's going to be the privileged caste, always, always, in all of these stories. Yeah. So there was, at this point of time, RSS started this campaign saying that these two gentlemen from RSS were great freedom fighters. And they started putting pressure on the Prime Minister to confer an award, a national award called Bharat Ratna. Now, this national award is the highest civilian award you can give in India. So RSS started putting pressure on Vajpayee to confer this award on them posthumously, right? Nothing happened at that point of time, but this is where you can see that they really start outrightly just cooking up history. They just, completely glaring, false, absolutely false claims, right? That, and I think now we are seeing it in many other parts of the world, that you go up on stage and you say something and you repeat it enough number of times, and suddenly your followers, if they're mad enough, they will believe it, no matter what the evidence says, right? And there are some such hilarious gaps in what they were saying. One of it is that RSS actually maintained detailed documentation of its functioning before and after 1947, 47 being the year that India got independence. And there was not even a single mention of what this organization did during the independence or how it participated, no, nothing whatsoever. In fact, till about 50 years after independence, there was no discussion about this. And suddenly, when they had their guy at the top, that's when they started insisting that they played a massive role. And it's also hilarious to me because RSS is an organization that will do X and then scream about it 100 times X, right? So it is. They always shout more than they do. And for instance, they have educate today, they have education programs. I want you to take a wild guess what the education program must be about.
Oh God, I'm trying to think. So here in the US with like the Project 2025 stuff, they released like 14 hours of training videos, and for our listeners, that's in air quotes. And a lot of it was just really like, I don't even know. I guess I'm still waking up, but like it was a lot of like just complaining about like the left and like the liberal agenda and stuff. So that's kind of where my brain thinks it's going. But
They follow the same, everybody follows the same playbook. It's very similar. It is a very anti-left narrative. And what they teach essentially is their own history. So it's RSS, and they call these like this as social work and educational initiatives, while all they do is talk about their own history, and that none of it is factual. So, if there's somebody as narcissistic as this group that can establish organizational educational institutes promoting their own selves and then calling it social work, what are the chances that they did not document such an important part of their presence in history, right? Like, it's arguably the most important thing that has happened in modern history to India, which is gaining independence. So, just logically, there's a massive fallacy. But even factually, right? Like, RSS claims that when during like 1920s, 1930s, this was the time when Indian freedom struggle was at its peak. So just about 2 decades, three decades before we actually got independence, this was when it was really picking up, and there were movements across the country, and there were common people were absolutely involved. Before that, it was more of a theoretical academic discussion, right? Now, RSS claims that in the 20s and 30s, they hid prominent leaders of the independence movement in their own homes. They provided their own homes as safe havens because they were major parts of the independence struggle. Now, anybody who thinks about this for just a second will understand like what a nonsense claim this is. Because forget about the fact that their own documentation doesn't mention this. If RSS was so involved in the independence movement, wouldn't their houses also be under the police watch? So how can they provide safe haven to other known people? It's just completely impossible, right? It's just a logical fallacy, and they spread this. Their followers believed it. The right wing has some weird issues, and one of them is believing whatever their overlords tell them, and they fully believe them. So, stuff like that. Then there was also the case of the Indian flag. Have you seen the Indian flag?
Oh, it's been a long time. I'm gonna look at a picture right now.
Yeah, I'm going to describe it, but if you see the picture, it'll be easier to understand. So it's three colors. It is saffron at the top, and then there is white with a wheel, and then there is green, right? And this also has gone through its own iterations. But on 14th August 1947, that was the first time, that was the eve of Indian independence. We got it at midnight, so 15th August was when we were declared a sovereign state. So the then Prime Minister, who was the first Prime Minister of the country, Jawaharlal Nehru, he was about to unfurl the flag for the first time. At this time, RSS, in its English newsletter called Organizer, so they had one Hindi newsletter and they had an English newsletter, and they wanted to reach a larger audience. So in the English newsletter Organizer, they wrote that the flag would, and I'm quoting here, I'm just reading this out, "Never be respected and owned by Hindus. The word three in itself is an evil." I don't know how they came up with this. "And a flag having three colors would certainly produce a very bad psychological effect and is injurious to the country." I mean, safe to say they weren't a fan of the communal harmony that the flag was,
That's so interesting. I feel like a lot of countries' flags have the three colors, like,
Yes.
yeah.
Oh, but here it is also important to, I should have actually given this context, but it is second nature to me. So saffron is the Hindu religion color, and green is of course Islam's color, right? And India has always struggled with Hindu-Muslim disputes. There was in 1947 when we did get our independence, we also split into two. We split into Pakistan and India, and it's 2025, and we are still at loggerheads, and still things haven't really changed all that much. So Hindu-Muslim dispute was already existing, and the flag sort of symbolized the communal unity, right? That was the context, and that is why RSS was so insanely against the flag. And it is, I mean, can you imagine today, in any country, if you disrespect the flag, it is the right wing that is going to be absolutely up in arms. But when they do it, it's not a big deal. And that's true everywhere.
So, yeah, thank you for that context. That definitely like makes sense. So obviously you weren't there in the 1940s. But do you have a sense of like what like percentage, I guess, of like the population was like sort of following the RSS or supporting them? Like, do you have a sense of like how big their following was?
I don't know about this. I don't know how big their following was in 20s and 30s. I know that in 1990s they started becoming really big, and then 2009 was when the current president was I mean the party's president was elected, not the party, sorry, RSS president was elected, and he sort of changed a lot of what the RSS how its influence looks like. And today, I don't know about 40s, but in 25, RSS has, at least it claims so, that it has about 60 million members, which is, to give you some context, it's I think a little more or maybe equal to one third of our population. That's massive, for one organization to have 60 million members. They have about, I think, how many thousand? I had this number. Yeah, I have this number here. They have 50,000 local branches. So 50,000 branches spread across the country today. I don't know how much it was in the 40s, but they have definitely grown, unfortunately, by leaps and bounds. I mean, they are today, they exist in every single aspect of our sort of our social fabric, our education. They have multiple arms, right? They have like their very obvious political arm. If you want, I can delve into that a little bit as well. But they have a political arm, which is BJP, and BJP is the party that is in power today. Since 2014, it's the far right party, and since 2014 till today, and then for another couple of years, BJP at least is going to be in power, and they are very clearly related to RSS. You see the ministers go to RSS meetings. It's a very, very big part. Then there are other societal aspects that they have infiltrated. So, for example, they have built out these affiliate organizations. There's this student body called, I will just actually give you the abbreviations because the full names are too long. So there is this student body called ABVP, which is essentially, it's in all universities and colleges, and it targets youth with nationalist ideas. Quite a violent arm of RSS, and quite a dangerous one as well, right? Because you're essentially recruiting 18, 19-year-olds into your agenda. And historically till today, anybody who has done that has never been a good guy. Like, anybody who has brought in 18, 19-year-olds to their mission and caught them young, they have never had anything good to say, and history hasn't had anything good to say about them either. So, take from that what you will. They also have a very interesting arm called BMS. BMS is a trade union wing that sort of unionizes labor, but it's I've been I mean I have known about RSS for a very long time. I have read about them. The one thing I cannot figure out is what BMS does, because it is apparent, it says that it's a trade union wing that for labor rights, but from a nationalist perspective and anti-communism. So I don't understand how anti-leftist, how are you pro-trade, pro-labor, and also anti-left when left is fully just about labor? So I really don't get it. I don't know what they do. I have never heard them take up a single case on behalf of employees or labor that is being discriminated. Nothing. It just seems like a farce organization that just aims to also infiltrate trade and employees. So they have got you at college level and university level when you are young. Then they need to get you when you enter the workforce, right? And then there are other organizations that they that those arms that are they are religious, they're more religious arms. RSS claims to be a social arm. So it is it's now woven into the very fabric of the society in India, and that's a very dangerous place to be in today.
Thank you for all of that context and history. That was fantastic. I'm noticing a lot of parallels with Turning Point USA and the like recruiting the teenagers and like students and stuff, and the sort of like that whole shit. And then Scientology actually keeps coming to mind while you're talking too, because they have all these different like branches. They have the education, and then while you were talking about how they said, like, they were helping during the independence, or that they do, like, sort of social services and stuff. And Scientology does that too, but usually it's like from the documentaries and stuff that I've seen, it's going to like disasters and handing out Scientology books. So it's not actually
Oh my
like
God.
helping, it's just like we're there, we're doing stuff. So that definitely came to
Oh
mind
my
while you were
God.
talking.
Oh wow, I did not know that. Okay, that part is slightly worse off than RSS. Because RSS does have, I mean, they to give them credit where it's due, they do have people who go for like, they distribute aid during floods. They have done that. They were part of a lot of rescue and rehabilitation movements as well. For example, in 1947, when India and Pakistan went through the partition, there was a lot of violence, right? It was an extremely violent event. So, a quick context, India was divided from the line, I mean, from between Punjab. Punjab is a state that is now in India and also in Pakistan. At that point of time, when India was undivided and under the British colonial rule, it was taken and divided in the middle, and Pakistan was supposed to be a country that's a country for Muslim people, for people who follow Islam. Now, and it was. I mean, there were a lot of issues, but it was sort of a political agreement that was made at that point of time. The problem was that there were many, many Hindus staying in the part of Punjab that would go to Pakistan, and there were many, many Muslims staying in India, in Punjab, that the part of which would go to India. And so they had to sort of switch places. And they are not Sims, right? These are actual human beings. They've built their lives, their homes are where they are. We are talking about 40s, so this is generational land. It was primarily, India had primarily been an agrarian economy, so a lot of land was accumulated, and people used to live there. People had their own whole communities. And even if they didn't, it was their home, right? Even if they had, like, they just decided to sit down over there, it was still their home. They lived there, and nobody had any right to throw them out. But because of this division and because of the the Hindu-Muslim disputes that were there, things got really ugly. Thousands and thousands of people were killed on both sides. And I mean, there were bodies of people that were sent, like they would fill trains full of bodies and just send them across the border to each other. It was that bad. And when this was happening, at that point of time, RSS did provide rehabilitation to the Hindus who were coming to this side of the border from Pakistan. But they were also instrumental in killing Muslims. And they instrumental in killings is being too kind. They fully went out and killed. They were a part of it, of the people who were murdering Muslims, who were trying to either not leave their homes and even sometimes agreeing to leave their homes and go to the other side of the border. So their motive of doing good did not come from doing good because it's the decent thing to do when you're a human being. But it came from the fact that, oh, these are our guys and we protect our guys and we kill the others. So actions were fine, intentions were quite terrible. But yeah, at least did not distribute books. Oh my God, the bar is really low, no?
So the RSS, did they have sort of like an I don't I'm sure it's different now, but like was there sort of like a militant aspect of it in the beginning too?
I love that you asked this. Have you can I share my screen and quickly show you the uniform? So this is a little old, just a few years, a couple of years old. They changed it. And right now there is it's in India we call it the Nehru cap. Do you have a Elizabeth, I don't know if you have a specific name for that cap, which is sort of triangular in the big in the front.
I'm sure we do. For our listeners, it looks a lot like you see like US service members wearing that sort of like, yeah, like you said, kind of pointed, almost like folded-esque.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. That sort of a cap, a white shirt, beige khaki shorts. Khaki is from cotton. So they're beige shorts, and they have the position they strike is almost like a weird half Nazi salute, and
Yeah.
they also carry sticks. This is grown ass men wearing these weird schoolboy shorts and just a comical picture, right? This is who they were. I don't know how to stop sharing. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So you see them and you feel, you know that they have a militant angle to this, right? They have fully gone ahead and been a part of massive violence. The thing is that in the when we are talking about 40s, they weren't really organized in that way. So there was a lot of hatred spread within communities under the garb of, and I genuinely think that I have no reason to believe that they were lying. I think they believed that they wanted to protect Hindus and they wanted to form a safe space for Hindus, but just by nature of excluding certain people, it got nasty and it got violent. And they did have the militant approach. They just weren't organized enough. It wasn't that big an organization. And also, you sort of had the bigger bully was already in the playground, right? This was British was already there, the colonizers. So I think a lot to do, and this is my opinion. I have just inferred this, but it feels like because they were already pandering to the bigger bully, they did not organize themselves and do any harm at that point of time. But post-independence, and especially where right-wing movements started cropping up, RSS, members would very much be a part of the organized movements over there, right? And one of the first one was, in fact, this was back in 1948. This is right after the partition of India. There was this, at this point of time, Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi was one of the main leaders of the Hindu-Muslim unity in India, right, within the country, right? He was against the partition. So naturally, this meant RSS despised him. By 1948, Gandhi was known across the world, right? There was no doubt about his influence. Don't get me wrong, he did a lot of shitty things as well. He was not a perfect person, but he did what he did right was what he did right, right? We can't deny that. And at this point of time, on in fact, January 30th, an RSS member called Nathuram Godse assassinated Gandhi. Purely for the reason that Gandhi supported Hindu-Muslim unity, right? So communal unity wasn't supported by RSS. And this, I think this is when RSS, you know, it started coming into the limelight as sort of militant, adjacent organization. Because even though RSS denied all involvement with Godse, they would, I mean, they were banned during that year. The government at that point of time banned RSS, and this was because RSS contributed to the atmosphere that led to Godse's death. And I'm not saying this like they just supported what Godse did. They very actively facilitated that environment, right? They were one of the main voices that were dividing people within the country, that were sowing these communal problems. They were very active in the violence that happened right after partition. And also some very, very obvious things, like after Godse assassinated Gandhi, RSS members went ahead and distributed sweets to people. Not a very bright bunch of people, but I've realized they don't need to be. They completely get away with it. And yeah, that was when their, you know, militant adjacent work started coming out more and more. And to get the ban removed, they also changed their organization's constitution. They said that they will not be involved in any political, causes. They would be completely devoted to social causes. They will hoist only the national flag and not the saffron flag exclusively. Like you can hoist other flags, but you have to hoist national flag as well. In typical scenarios, I would be against this this concept that you have to hoist your national flag along with anything else that you do. But considering why RSS did not want to hoist the national flag, I thought it was a fair requirement that please respect other communities. And this was in 1949, and almost immediately they forgot about it. Like, they changed their own constitution and they established their first sort of political party association in 1951. So within 2 years, they were done. And they entered the political scenes of the country. When they entered the political scenes, I think that's when they were able to get away with a lot of police state behavior. And that continues till today. If you look up the communal riots that have happened in the past 10 years, it's alarmingly high.
Yeah. So could you kind of paint a picture of what their role is right now in Indian politics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So RSS has a direct line till the formation of BJP, the party that runs the current government. I mean, from 1951, like I said, when they associated with the political party, and then there were changes in political parties, and then they reached BJP. BJP is, I mean, the members of political parties formed previously by the RSS were the ones that formed BJP. So fully a direct line. And that direct line continues till today, right? Like the current Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, he has been a long-standing RSS member. And he's He's weirdly pally with them. Like he even says odd things. For example, in this is of course by no means the worst thing that has happened, but a really weird thing. We have our prime minister give speeches on the Independence Day, right? Like most countries, I'm assuming. And Modi, in his speech on this year's Independence Day, which was in 15th on 15th August 25, he said that the RSS is the world's largest NGO. To give you some context, NGO is a non-profit. In India, they call it a non-governmental organization, but otherwise it's a non-profit. That's such a weird thing to say. Like, non-profit by definition is involved in purely social work. It does not have it's at least it shouldn't or is not supposed to have political affiliations and is definitely not supposed to be involved in communal riots. And he says stuff like this, and which is completely unnecessary as well, right? Like, what was the point of saying that they are the world's largest non-profit? So yeah, there's a strange involvement of Modi, but there's also a lot of real political impact, right? And this started off in around 2010s. So 2010s was essentially when BJP started regaining the popularity that it had in India. And I mean, the last time they had won elections was in 1999, and India has the coalition government formed, so they did not win by a pure majority. They had to partner with, form a coalition with other political parties back in 1999. And then in 2014, BJP was elected to power with a large majority, right? They won 282 out of 542 seats, so it was a massive majority. And parallelly, at this point of time, we see that RSS was not just a cultural organization, right? With the different bodies that I was talking to you before, the ABVP, the trade union body, the religious bodies, they had already integrated themselves into the society, and they were instrumental in bringing BJP to power in 2014. And since 2014, we are seeing, and this continues till today, is that BJP government has implemented policies that are aligned far too much with RSS vision and the nationalism, cultural identity, and all of those things that they keep talking about. So the RSS sway in policymaking has increased so much. For instance, one such, and this has been alleged by many, many prominent activists, social workers, political parties, opposition leaders, a lot of people, that BJP runs, like BJP is heavily influenced by RSS. And one such very prominent incident that happened, this was the construction of a temple in a city called Ayodhya in India. Okay. And it sounds ridiculous, but it was disputed over decades. It was a massive, massive problem. So the issue was that on this land existed till 1992, I think, was a mosque called Babri Masjid, right? Now, BJP's and RSS claim was that before this mosque was constructed, there lay, I mean, we have a mythological book called Ramayan, and one of our gods is Ram. So we claimed our holy book told us that our god was born here. So this particular land belongs to us. If that sounds familiar in today's context for somewhere else, that's exactly, everybody does this. All of these assholes are on the same side, right? So they said, and it was so ridiculous because they were like, before the 16th century, Babri Masjid was constructed in the 16th century. And they said, before the 16th century, our God was here. Which is such a nonsense claim, right? What do you mean by that? So They said that they will construct the temple there. What was alarming was what happened in 2019. The Supreme Court of India ruled in favor of constructing the temple at the disputed site. And I read the verdict, and the verdict was very strange. It talked about how one, the people representing the masjid, the Babri Masjid, the mosque construction, so the Islamic society representatives, they were unable to provide documentation to support that the land, the area belonged to them, the land belonged to them, which is a wild thing to say because how do you prove that a public spot belongs to somebody? It's by definition belongs to everybody. It's a state, and a state monument already exists over there. And if you're talking about documentation, what documentation was there that a god was born in that particular place? It's again, by definition, mythology. It's a myth. Such strange things were cited while they, they wanted to they passed the ruling in favor of BJP. This is when things, when you see the impact of RSS a little too clearly, right? Because RSS has been propagating this since forever, especially since the 90s. But I mean, 92, they led the demolition of the mosque, right? Babri Masjid. So you see their impact very, very clearly. But you also see that it is not just, it's not just passing, a legislation that can be cut down by the Supreme Court, but also because, also such a massive influence on legislature, sorry, on judiciary. If the Supreme Court may, passes such a weird judgment that has so many logical fallacies, then you know that it is, you are left with no route, right? The legislation is already in their hands. The execution, which is the police. So in India, typically police is in state hands, but we have two separate governments. We have the state government and we also have the national government, right? And in India, the state controls the police. But in certain states, like in Delhi, the police is controlled by the Ministry of Home Affairs, which is the national ministry. So you still have one of the most influential and powerful police forces within your control. And the only thing that was left was judiciary, and very clearly the judiciary is also leaning towards, and not even leaning towards, like absolutely completely adhering to what BJP and RSS have been talking about. So, and such things have only increased. We are now trapped in a loop of voter fraud, which nobody does anything about. There have been thousands of lynchings of Muslims under the suspicion of carrying beef, because cows are apparently holy animals in our religion. I say "our" because I also belong to this religion. I'm an atheist though, but I was born in this religion, and now I don't have a religion. So, just to, and I think I've defaulted to saying "our religion" also because, well, there is safety attached in being in the majority religion. But yeah, it is like it's just permeated everywhere. Within the society, it is fully, it's become a violent structure. The riots that are, the lynchings that I was talking about in Hindu religion, cows are considered sacred. So people associated with the RSS and the right-wing movement have just started killing Muslims on the suspicion that they are carrying beef. Just suspicion. No proof, no validation, nothing. There was, I mean, there have been communal riots in the capital of the city, where the police has not just stood by and watched, but also participated. I'm sure you can draw parallels to this as well. Yeah, so it has, I mean, every aspect of execution and policy making and judiciary, you see how the theology of RSS, the vision of RSS, has completely permeated every level of the government. And that's terrifying. It's very clearly a communal religious organization, and that makes it anti-constitution. It's terrifying.
Do you know of any like movements or groups or anything that are sort of like pushing back or trying to make changes?
So in India, essentially, there is no equivalent of an anti-RSS as a whole, primarily because nobody recognized the need of this for a very, very long time, right? Nobody, none of us knew that this is what RSS was doing until the 1990s. But the really good thing is that, one, we don't just have two parties, right? We do have, there are liberal parties, yes, but we also have left parties. So when left and liberal sort of thought processes come together, it's just, I call me biased, but I don't think we need liberals. I think left parties are enough. But because most people resonate with liberal parties more than left parties, so just politically, there are these political parties with their own issues and with their own terrible people, but at least against the RSS and BJP that already exist. So there's a base association that you can form, but also a lot of student movements, a lot of artistic circles. There are numerous people within different industries who have been speaking up. Of course, they have been sidelined. It is very, very unfortunate that the mainstream, for example, Bollywood, the film industry within India, and one of the largest film industries in the entire world, with some of the richest, richest assholes in the industry, they have completely supported BJP. But you do see smaller voices of dissent. So that exists in every single industry. And that is what I, and to be very honest, I think that sort of, I don't know how to explain this. Of course, a larger organization, an anti-RSS, so to say, would be helpful. But these smaller groups, they sort of let a lot of conversations happen at home. And depending on how I'm feeling that day, I feel optimistic about it or completely in despair about this. The optimistic part is, I mean, to beat this level of evil that exists in the very fabric of our society today, right? Because of RSS, you have to go micro, right? You have to be able to talk at homes, you have to be able to talk within your peer groups, and you have to change people's opinions at that level also. And you see the impact of that because the last elections that happened last year, BJP did not get a majority. They had to come back in a coalition government. So I have some hope that next time they will not come back. But then on days that I'm not feeling that great, I also remember that they are everywhere, and just, it's difficult for individuals to do much, to change entire systems. So I don't know if I've answered your question or I just went into an existential dread here.
No, that was perfect. I was, trying to end on like as hopeful as possible kind of note, but it's like that here too, it's like, it's, yeah.
I mean, I guess there is a little bit of comfort in the fact that every right-wing cycle has ended. Historically, that's been the case. Although I don't know why you all started back the cycle. Like, who ended it? In 4 years, you ended it. Why did you have to start? Look at us. We are suffering constantly. You ended it so quickly. Why did you go back?
I think part of it too, well, this could be like a whole ramble, but so much of it is like the institution itself. And like, you know, obviously Trump is loud about how he feels about things, but Biden deported a lot of people during his tenure, and Obama drone striked a lot of people during his tenure. So, yeah, a lot of it is systemic.
I'll be honest, for us at this on this side of the world, every elected leader is the same. For East as far as America is concerned, because every elected leader has destroyed some part of the East. But it's wild to me that we keep choosing in our respective countries as well, we keep choosing the worst options possible. Legitimately, let's just find absolutely the most terrible person and then put them in charge of these large ass countries. But yeah, like I was saying, there's some hope because right-wing cycles do end. But there's also the fact that while this happens, there'll be so much loss of life. It continues. There is also the climate change, and where we are at a space where we need to do something really, really urgently. But we have right-wing governments all over the world, and we are going backwards. So I don't know. It is, like I said, it depends on the day. Some days I feel good about it. Some days I feel absolutely, I am sure that we are just speeding towards doom, and there's no stopping us. So depends on the day. Cat's hip.
Unless there was anything else that came to mind while you were talking, I guess, yeah, was there anything else that came to mind while we were talking, or are you getting ready for bed?
Can I be really petty and mention one more thing about RSS policy? RSS was hell-bent on ensuring that India took a very pro-Israel stand. And that tells you all about what you need to know about them. Not because India had anything to gain out of it, but because pro-Israel automatically meant anti-massive Muslim population, which is anti-Palestinians. At that point of time, Palestinians were mostly Muslims. And this was obviously true for most parts of the world, wherever certain groups were existing, certain religious groups, because immigration was not very common. Migration was not very common. So when Israel was formed in 1948, this was RSS claiming this. And till date, you will see Indian right wing support Israel. So that also tells you a lot about what you need to know about
Interesting.
them.
Thank you for that input. Yeah, with the United States, I feel like a lot of it, well, there's also part of it too, where like you have a lot of like evangelicals that think that like if Israel controls that land, then like all of this biblical like things are gonna start happening. And like I'm not an expert in that field, obviously, but so it's interesting, like, you know, sort of different reasons why that does
Always to
come.
find, to somehow it call like horrible people will always find a common thread. They will, I don't know, like every oppressor has a common thread running between them, and it's wild. I'm sorry, I completely ruined the ending on a hopeful note.
It's fine.
I'm the wrong guest for that.
No, you are totally fine. And thank you so much for doing this interview. I know it's late for you. I feel like I still haven't woken up, but you did fantastic, so thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. And thank you for beginning so early for me. I know it was 8 when we started.
Yeah, my alarm went off at like 7 and I like rolled over and checked my email and I was like, oh shit. And then I saw your second email, because the time zone thing.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's all good. Yeah,
But
no,
yeah,
all good.
I am so grateful that you decided to have me on. It was so much fun talking about this. I love sharing my rage and my dread. And I do that with people I like. So like, please don't take it the wrong way.
No, and I'd love to have you on again, if there's another topic that comes to mind. Real quick,
Thank you
once
so much.
again, yeah, I'd love to have you plug your podcast again.
Absolutely. So the podcast is called Don't Know, Do Care. We are three friends and we come together and we talk about one of us prepares a topic that the other two don't know anything about. And that's how the name comes in, that don't know but do care about knowing. So that's how we talk to each other about all of these random weird topics. We have spoken about what's in the Super Mario's Super Mushroom. We have spoken about alien conspiracies. We have spoken about the history of okay, the word okay. We have spoken about imperial versus metric measurement. So it's a and of late we also spoke about a tree in Canada. So it's a strange, wild mix of topics. It's supposed to be educational, but it is mostly banter. It's mostly fun. And please do check it out. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. And let me know what you think about it.
Yes, and I will put links to all of that in the show notes to make it easy for everybody.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
That is a wrap for July's episode. We'll be back in August with another interview. This one is going to be a little bit more meta, I guess. Apologies for the cat rubbing against the mic. He just really wants to be on the show. If you want to support the show, you can follow slash subscribe on your favorite podcasting platforms. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok, and you can give the show a rating, which is helpful. And then if you want to, you can join my Patreon at patreon.com/talkingshitabout. And by the way, all of this stuff, the links are at the bottom of the show notes for this episode and all of the episodes. So you don't have to remember any of these links or write them down. You can just go to my link tree and click on stuff there. You can also find my merch shop there. All sorts of different goodies there. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. Again, we'll be back the first Monday in August with another interview. Stay safe.